The following program is a sports handicapping show. That's right, we will be discussing sports betting and all kinds of other gambling stuff, including game predictions. As you know, not every bet will win, but we do our best. Feel free to use this information at your own risk, and remember, gamble wisely, folks. Broadcasting from the Vegas Video Network studios, live from the Las Vegas Strip, Covers.com presents Vegas Sports Day! And now from the sports betting capital of the world, here are your hosts, Teddy and the Professor.
It's Monday in Sin City, and you are watching Vegas Sports Day, the pulse of the sports betting world. I'm your host, Teddy Covers, joined, as always, by my sometimes well-dressed colleague, the Professor, Dave Malinsky.
Coming up today, we're going to have a little Ella Fitzgerald in the background to set up an NFL struggling quarterback. And yes, you're going to write later saying we could have used Justin Timberlake for the same reference, but note that we didn't. We've got the sweet sound of leather bouncing on hardwood coming back into our lives for the next 5 months until the Final Four in New Orleans. And get out your chemistry sets. Could science be the key to breaking down tonight's Monday night affair in Philadelphia?
Well, that's an interesting tease. And I have no idea what you're talking about there, and I'm doing the show with you, Dave. But let's start and tell us what you saw over the course of the weekend. It's time for your first take on a Monday morning in Vegas.
First take is sort of a memorable juxtaposition that for about 15 minutes or so Saturday night, I was the second biggest Oklahoma State fan in the world. I don't have the $165 million T-Boone Pickens had to give to the university. But on Saturday night, you know, you've got Alabama and LSU here. Next television over, Oklahoma State and Kansas State. And as you watch those games unfold, you're sitting there praying, please let us tomorrow have LSU or Alabama against Oklahoma State. And that you're able to see so clearly that big physical difference. If you watch those two games side by side, Oklahoma State and Kansas State almost look like an intramural fraternity championship of flag football. The level of physical play, the level of tackling, so very, very wide, not just between those teams, but between those conferences in general. So we may get our dream to come true at some point, but when Kansas State was threatening to win that game, boy, were we Oklahoma State fans, and we'll probably stay that way all the way till the championship game. Teddy, what did you bring back with you from this weekend?
Well, so you're telling me you want to fade Oklahoma State in a big game. That's the bottom line for you.
Give me an SEC team that will hit people against Oklahoma State.
What about the game against Oklahoma? Doesn't Oklahoma qualify as having an SEC-type defense, per se?
I watched them on Saturday also. I saw them against Texas Tech. Nobody in the Big 12 hits anymore. What used to be a physical conference is now almost a purely finesse league. We've exploited that, of course, in the bowls the last couple of years. I think we're going to probably be able to do that again.
Good take, Dave. My first take on a Monday has to do with the luck factor, the coin flip factor, or whatever you want to call it. Two games in the NFL yesterday came down to absolute coin flips. You know, Arizona, Patrick Peterson starts returning a punt from the one-yard line. The one! Which, in theory, you're not supposed to go behind the 10, but he returns a punt from the 1, rookie mistake. It's not a mistake. He runs in for a touchdown on the other end, and every Arizona backer is rewarded. St. Louis backers, not so much. Last night in the Sunday night game, Baltimore and Pittsburgh comes down to one play at the end of the game. That play turns out to be a 28-yard touchdown pass. If you had the under or the Steelers, you weren't real happy with Torrey Smith's reception. If you had the over or the Ravens, you were very happy with Torrey Smith's TD catch. But the bottom line with any of these type of games, and again, one of the biggest goals of this show is to help you get those little edges, game in, game out, week in, week out. If you keep pounding little edges repeatedly, you're going to find a way to make money at this. But the one thing that you can't do is overreact to those coin flip losses. When you're hot, when you're red hot, you tend to win all of those games. When you're ice cold, you tend to lose all of those games. In general, when we talk about the luck factor in football, and it is real. It's real in basketball. It's real in baseball. There will be lucky wins and losses. What you have to try to do as a professional is maintain a level head, whether you're on the right side or the wrong side of those type of decisions. And of course, when it comes to decisions, it means that it's time to segue into Market Watch. That might be the worst segue of all time, but I'm confident I'll find worse ones than that before this show is through. Market Watch, and of course, with Market Watch for today, we have to talk about college basketball. The 2K Classic tips off tonight. We had no NBA to talk about last week. Everybody's dying for hoops, and of course, college hoops starts here. And for all the talk about college football needing a playoff, college basketball has one. So there's an inherent likability about the sport, perhaps, that college football doesn't have. And of course, while there is March Madness to concentrate on months and months from now, the bottom line is, for now, we have to take a look at some of the zigzags in the season. Take a look at one of the teams playing tonight, Arizona, who I believe came into the season, certainly ranked number 16, if memory serves correctly. They lost to Seattle Pacific at home. That's Division II Seattle Pacific. Should we be shocked by this? Probably not. Look at last year. Butler lost at home to Division II Northern State. West Virginia lost to Division II Northern Kentucky. Now, it's worth noting that in these preseason tune-ups, they don't count in the RPI standings, and they don't count towards anything for later in the season. They don't even count on a team's record. So you'll see coaches taking chances and doing things differently sometimes in those preseason games than they will in the game starting tonight. But a lot of times you have to take those early, very early season results with definitely a grain of salt. A lot of coaches use a little bit of a slap in the face for their team as kind of a wake-up call and a reality check.
It's one of the things we'll talk about a lot in the next couple of weeks is November basketball being an entirely different sport than what we're going to see come January or February in conference play. The first focus you have to have is, do the coaches really want to win this game? Are they just working on their rotation? They talk about the lack of a playoff in college football. College football has a playoff. It's called the regular season. Alabama-LSU on Saturday night, that's a playoff game. Oklahoma State-Kansas State, playoff game. College basketball won't have a single game all year that matches that because about half of the tournament field for March is already set. Teams that know they're going to be in the tournament, they can look at their schedule. They can see their 20 or 24 wins. So it's the process of slowly putting your team together over the course of the next couple of months. Some fascinating teams to watch tonight. St. John's and William & Mary. We'll tip off first at 7 o'clock on ESPNU. St. John's only one letterman back from last year. They lost as high a percent of their points, rebounds, and minutes played as any team we have ever charted. But you know what? They're better this year. They're not better right now, but they've got better players. It's possible that you could have four or five of these St. John's players ending up being drafted in the NBA at some point. So what's the goal tonight? Learn how to play with each other. The Big East schedule doesn't start for almost two full months. There's no real priority. We need to win and win big tonight. Let's put the pieces together. Of course, our goal tonight, and we can't wait to see him on the court. St. John's is one of the great name teams of all time, but God's gift, Achawa. Also a talented player, one of many talented young guys in the St. John's rotation, but not a big focus on them. Winning that game tonight. In fact, Steve Lavin won't even be there. Had successful surgery for prostate cancer. Not with the team yet on the sidelines. Rico Hines will be the coach on the bench this evening.
And when we talk about some of these early season games, we always want to look at, especially with a team like the Red Storm, who are going to be so young, very talented, but very young. So obviously the focus on improving, not on winning by margin. But, you know, a 13 turnovers to only 9 assists in their recent exhibition win over St. Mary's of Maryland, only 22 of 42 from the free throw line. And again, missed free throws and a poor assist to turnover ratio. You can count on it from a lot of the teams that are very, very young, but there's another thing that you can also count on. And that has to do with trying to be ahead of the market, trying to predict which way the numbers are going to move and getting yourself in position to take advantage of those line moves. And you know what's going to happen. Year in, year out, the teams that are going to attract early money are going to be teams that return a lot of talent, return a lot of starters, return a high percentage of their points and rebounds and minutes from a season ago. The teams that are going to be bet against early are going to be the teams that lost a lot of that talent. And that's why with St. John's losing basically everyone they had from last year's roster, you knew what that line was going to go. It opened 10, was boom, bet down to 8, 8.5 in short order. You can anticipate these line moves. You can be aware of them. And if you're savvy, you can take advantage of them and make sure you get the best of the number, regardless of which side you're looking for.
Yeah, something we won't do tonight, because St. John's just a little too precocious to trust. But this is one of those good examples. William and Mary's got more experience coming back. This line's already shown a little bit of action to the underdog. Yet think about this. St. John's will have the better player at every position on the court. If some steam goes in on William and Mary later, maybe a pocket bet to the Red Storm, despite that youthfulness. They're just simply that much better.
What's your buy number on this game, Dave? You're looking at a 7, 7.5? Is that the...
We do 7 for something. There's not a number where we make a big bet, but 7, we have a rooting interest.
Yeah, fair enough. Speaking of rooting interest, we have a rooting interest in you being a part of this show. We're getting great questions every day, and we really appreciate it. Please keep those emails coming in. sportsday@covers.com is the email address. Again, sportsday@covers.com. We have the toll-free listener rant line, 866-966-4599. And, of course, you can get involved in the covers.com community. Active threads going on right now. Discussions at covers.com/forums. When we come back, we're going to delve deep with our scalpels. It's post-mortem time.
Are you looking for the latest odds, the fastest scores, the most important trends, and the best matchups and stats? Are you looking for the key late-breaking information that can make you a winner? Well, Covers.com has the answer. The world's largest sports betting community gives you a front-row seat in the heart of the action, from the opening lines to the final scores. If you want to stay ahead of the game, Covers covers the numbers.
This is David Ivey for Pub Crawl. It's funny because this is David from. You should just leave it on. Hi, I'm David Ivey from Pub Crawl, and you're watching the Vegas Video Network. And scene.
Okay, guys, time to scrub up. Let's get those surgical gowns on. It's time for the postmortem, where we take you deep inside the game to show you things you should have seen, but probably didn't.
And who stayed up late to watch Utah State at Hawaii? Well, I actually did. You probably did too, Dave. Obviously, otherwise we wouldn't be talking about this on the Monday show. But while you were sleeping, Utah State and Hawaii, late Saturday night, and you logged in the next day, you probably saw that Utah State rallied from behind, was able to win that game in outright fashion in Honolulu. But neither the final score nor the stats in that ballgame made you think anything special was up. Yet, there was a lot going on behind those numbers. Let's start with a little postmortem here. Explain why you need to be joining us for postmortem, because there's certainly some secrets that aren't in the box score.
Consider this scenario if you're Utah State. You're having a very disappointing season. You'd already lost 5 games in which you either were tied or had the lead in the fourth quarter. That includes having the lead against Brigham Young and Auburn, just backbreaking losses. So what happens? You fall behind 28-7 at Hawaii, and right before halftime, you have the shuddering image of your starting quarterback, Chucky Keaton, having to do what they call spine boarded. He was injured his neck so badly, they had to attach him to a spine board. They took him out on a cart. So you go into the locker room at halftime, and you should be demoralized. It's been a long and tough season. Your quarterback's injured. You're down by 21 points. Adam Kennedy, who you saw in the photo, he's got to step in at quarterback, and guess what? He'd only thrown 5 passes all year. So how unlikely is that Utah State turnaround? Yet they came out in the second half, and they dominated. Kennedy was terrific. 8 out of 12 passing, over 150 yards, couple of touchdowns. They ran the ball well. Somehow they reached inside themselves, and they found a spark. The reason we bring that up is not only to understand Saturday's game better, but for what could happen going forward, when a team wins a game that way, there's a special chemistry that can carry over. We like this particular quote from linebacker Bobby Wagner. It's a program changer for us. Other good news, too, that I think will impact them when they take the practice field this week, Keaton has been cleared to fly back to the mainland. They don't know when he's going to be able to play again or if he'll play again this season. But just the fact that he'll be coming back to rejoin his team on campus, it's going to be awfully big for them. We've been picking on the Oakland Raiders here the last couple of weeks for the Carson Palmer trade for good reason. We thought they overpaid. if you're real close to being a champion, maybe you could give up what they gave up to get pushed over the top. But now let's take a look. You're going to go into next year's draft without a pick in the first four rounds. And that's despite the fact that you have weaknesses all over the field, including a rush defense that's dead last in the NFL by a wide margin. What was their thought process? Here's our timing. Look at the way the schedule lays out. We get the Chiefs at home. We get a bye week. We get the Broncos at home. Last 2 years, we went 5-0 against those teams, and we beat them by 98 points. So to overuse a phrase that we sort of get tired of hearing it, hey, Oakland, how's that working out for you?
Not so well so far, Dave. Not so well at all. Let's look at the facts through the first two games of the Carson Palmer era in Oakland. They lost at home to the Chiefs and Broncos by 42 points. As you mentioned, two teams that they had dominated and gone 5-0 against over the previous three seasons. Palmer played a major role in both those losses. He has completed less than 50% of his passes. He's thrown six interceptions in just 56 attempts. And, yeah, there were some positives in the game against Denver yesterday. No question. He put up some yards. He threw three touchdowns in that ball game. But the mistakes that Carson Palmer made in that game, no question, they cost Oakland a chance to win that ballgame. Up seven, late third quarter, with the ball, marching down the field. Carson Palmer's got a wide-open receiver in Denver territory, overshoots the pass, ends up getting picks. Next play, Willis McGahee busts through the line for a 60-plus yard touchdown. And from then on, it was all Broncos, 24 unanswered against this Raiders team. And Palmer finished the game with three INTs, just like he had in the first meeting between these two teams. Now, the rest of the Raiders look just as bad. Some big concerns now for Oakland. You talked about that dead last run defense, and boy, 298 rushing yards allowed in yesterday's ballgame, 7.8 yards per carry for Denver, and for good measure, 15 Oakland Raider penalties for 130 yards. So the bad judgment here wasn't just thinking that Carson Palmer was going to come in and be an immediate asset for this team. It was also thinking that the Raiders were actually maybe as good as they looked over the first couple of weeks of the season and were legitimate contenders this year based on their performance over the last couple days. It's pretty clear that they're not. And giving away draft picks like the Raiders gave them away in the Carson Palmer deal has a potential to be a real noose around this team's neck moving forward.
When we come back, we're going to empty out the mailbox and tell you why people in San Diego are humming Cry Me a River's, hopefully Ella's version, not Timberlake. You're watching Vegas Sports Day.
Let me know when I'm live. Hi, everybody. This is Bridget Magnus of Getting Real Estate in Vegas, and you are watching the Vegas Video Network.
Livestream is your premier place to watch live events on the web, mobile devices, and connected TVs. See new events daily or broadcast your own at livestream.com. Livestream. Be there.
Before we go inside the numbers, it's time to answer those viewer emails and forum questions. Though we don't have any good forum questions today. We had one good one, but it came in just before the show. We got to save it for tomorrow so we can think of an answer. But let's start with a letter from Andrew D. Great show, Teddy/David. I've been following your advice for years. Thank you, Andrew. The show is very much needed for the betting community. Thank you, Andrew. My question is, are there any plans for guest handicappers to appear on the show for their opinions?
Don't you just sort of love that compliment? I love you guys, but are you going to bring anybody else in instead?
You got anybody better?
Yeah, Andrew. We can read between the lines on that one. Actually, you know, we like questions like that because this is your show. Let us know what you want. We've done a lot of angles that we've researched for people who've asked us questions. Some of these have been private that we've answered off the air because they requested it that way. It's your show. You tell us what you want. We'll try to set it up and deliver it the right way. We know we've had people say we want more game breakdowns. We'll certainly be incorporating that now that we have daily basketball as a part of the rotation. But it's your show. You tell us what you want, and we'll see if we can find a way to deliver it. Back to the mailbox, and this one comes from Grant. He says, I know you guys have talked about the fact that teams from the SEC like LSU and Alabama do not have to think about style points because if they simply win their games, they're in the championship game. But because Alabama has such a slight edge over Stanford, and talking about the BCS ratings that came out last night, could that thinking actually change a bit for Nick Saban?
That's a great question. And the answer, and is in a word, yes, you know, now margin matters for the Alabama Crimson Tide, and we would expect them, assuming they can get over the hangover of their four botched field goal loss to LSU over the weekend. But the bottom line is that now margin's going to matter. This team, as they currently stand, slightly ahead of Stanford in the BCS standings, but Alabama's got a game against Georgia Southern. Stanford's got a game against Oregon, and then another one coming against Notre Dame. So the Cardinal will have a chance to move ahead of the Crimson Tide in those BCS standings should they win out, and that's going to mean that margin is going to matter for Nick Saban and company. There was a time where it didn't. Now, clearly, it does, and bettors need to react accordingly. Emails, keep them coming, please. sportsday@covers.com. And again, get involved with that posting forum. Active threads going right now, covers.com in the forums. Now, it's time to go inside the numbers. And Dave, your Cracker Jack research staff came up with a real good one for Monday.
We were thinking about making a post-mortem analysis on Phillip Rivers, but thought, you know what, the way the numbers lay out, let's use it in this segment. We talked a lot about Rivers last week. Possibly a career-defining situation off of that late turnover against Kansas City when he literally handed a game away. Well, what did Rivers do against the Packers? It was more of the same, and it's actually become an alarming pattern. In the first quarter of the game, a couple of pick sixes thrown. How unusual is this for him? The juxtaposition is actually startling. So when we go inside the numbers for Monday, let's take a look the last couple years at the ratio of touchdowns to turnovers for Rivers. In 2009, 28 touchdown passes, only 9 interceptions, only 3 fumbles. In 2010, 30 touchdown passes, only 13 interceptions and 4 fumbles. And by the way, those are lost fumbles that we're referring to. Now, if you add up 9 and 10, that's a ratio of 2-1 touchdown passes to turnovers. Now look at this season, only 7 touchdowns, 11 interceptions, 3 fumbles lost. That 2-1 ratio in the right way in 2009 and 2010 is now 2-1 in the opposite direction. A lot to talk about with Phillip Rivers and Carson Palmer, who just happened to be going head-to-head in the first Thursday night NFL game of the year. That's why we're talking about them today.
Exactly. Might be one of those games where the team that screws up last is the team that ends up losing, much like the Alabama-LSU game we saw on Saturday night. Coming up, the news you need to know in our Insider Six-Pack.
Traditional media believes that after about 3 minutes, you'll tune out. Most Vegas media companies think if it doesn't jiggle, you won't tune in. At the Vegas Video Network, we think both are wrong. The Vegas Video Network is the first and only live online broadcast network that specializes in insider news and expert views about Vegas. We combine great storytelling with the ability to watch when and where you want, on your computer, mobile device, or television. Discover the real Las Vegas. Visit VegasVideoNetwork.com.
Okay, guys, it's time for that Insider Six-Pack, where we drop 6 chunks of knowledge on you for the upcoming football weekend. And we're going to start in Oklahoma. And on Monday, you know, time to check the infirmary. We need to know what happened over the weekend. And one of the biggest injury losses for any team in college football this past weekend was the loss by the Oklahoma Sooners of their star wide receiver, Ryan Broyles. Ryan Broyles, one of the best in college football, in the history of college football at his position. Look at these numbers. Okay, 347 receptions. That's number one all time. 4,586 yards. That's number two all time. 45 touchdowns in that pass-first Sooners offense. He suffered a torn ACL in Saturday's win over A&M. It ended a season in which he was on pace to once again catch more than 100 passes. Now, Oklahoma's going to have time to work on their passing game before the big showdown with Oklahoma State in December. But a guy like Ryan Broyles for a pass-first offense is going to be very, very difficult for the Sooners to replace.
to be one of the most memorable moments of this college season, and a very poignant one on Saturday. It's a camera shot of Broyles on the sidelines when the doctors told him that ACL was torn, and you just see him crying there. Tough end to his season, but we'll see him on Sundays a lot for the years to come. A lot of college games off the board as this week begins, so let's start addressing them. A lot of them quarterback injury related, starting with Army and Rutgers, who'll be playing in Yankee Stadium. We believe that this is off because of the injury to Army quarterback Trent Steelman, even though Max Jenkins has actually played pretty well in a starting role the last two games. But also maybe some confusion at Rutgers. If you look at that box score, you'll see that starter Gary Nova did not play the whole game, but he wasn't hurt. He was benched for being ineffective. Chaz Dodd, the former starter, came in the game in the second half. He helped rally them to that overtime win over South Florida.
Let's talk about South Carolina right now, where, you know, Marcus Latimer, the star running back, already out for the season. Steven Garcia, the former starting quarterback, he's gone forever, finally. After, five or six suspensions, finally got the boot. The last thing Steve Spurrier needed was an injury to his replacement quarterback, the young Connor Shaw. But Shaw suffered a concussion versus Arkansas on Saturday night. He's going to be re-examined later in the week. But while he's sidelined for a few days, we're talking about the redshirt freshman Dylan Thompson working with the first-string offense in practice. And we also expect to see South Carolina spending more time working with their Wildcat packages. And that means the wide receiver Bruce Ellington is going to take some snaps behind center as well. Remember, Spurrier basically powered up to beat Florida earlier in the year. Didn't worry about throwing the football. 36-14 win in the Swamp. That was last year. There was a 239-35 rushing advantage for South Carolina in that ballgame. And that may well be the Gamecocks' mentality from here on out.
Let's go to the flip side of the same game. Connor Shaw's status, not the only one that's keeping this one off the board. John Bradley, the Florida quarterback, suffered a bruised arm in the fourth quarter against Vanderbilt on Saturday. He left, did not return. Chris Rainey, a key cog to their offense, dressed but did not play. Still able to squeeze out a win against Vanderbilt because they got a big game from Jeff Demps. They experimented with the pistol offense a little bit, found ways to get better running angles for him from scrimmage. Ran for over 150 yards, including a 52-yard touchdown run that was kind of the backbreaker with a little over 2 minutes remaining. We will not know till later in the week if Brantley's going to be able to go.
All right, so sue us. We live in Vegas. We like to talk about West Coast football, whether it's Pac-12, whether it's Mountain West, or like this information coming from the WAC Conference in the New Mexico State-Fresno game coming up this weekend. Obviously, no line on this ballgame yet, because of a potential concussion issue for New Mexico State quarterback Matt Christian. We're not going to know his status until much later in the week. Now, the freshman came in, Trevon Caldwell, and he actually played well in his limited time, including 8 of 12 for 120 yards and a touchdown on Saturday. Admittedly, that was against the reserve Georgia defenders, but make no mistake about it. The reserve Georgia defenders are better than the starters that Pat Hill's Fresno State Bulldogs bring to the equation that he's going to face this week. It may be time for Caldwell to take over the full reins anyway. The Aggies still have 4 games left this season. They can pick up some valuable experience.
Part of the daily processes for the next couple of weeks, we're going to say, get those college basketball yearbooks out, study the teams, and then get ready for us to tell you which of those players you just studied aren't going to be playing. There's going to be an awful lot of that going on between now and conference play. Starting tonight, William and Mary, projected starter Kyle Galliard, who had 18 starts last year. He's already out for the season with a knee injury. Making it worse this evening, though, Tim Rustoven, who likely would have started in his place or certainly would have played key minutes off the bench, he's out with a foot injury. William and Mary not bringing a lot of depth or size in the front court this evening. Mississippi State's got a very talented freshman guard, DeVille Smith. We're not going to see him for a little while. They thought he might have suffered a concussion last week, complained of some dizziness and some concussion-type symptoms. Was not a concussion, but they're still not sure they want to have him out on the court yet. Don't expect him to play tonight. And in Arizona, Kevin Parham is actually making progress. Would be a starting swingman for the Wildcats. Bad accident when he was visiting family in the Bronx in September. Or accident, we're not sure. No classification yet. He got shot in the right knee. He is practicing. It looks like he will be contributing to the team this season, but we're not going to see him tonight.
We talked about God's gift of Chua. Whatever happened to God, Sham God? Remember that guy?
It's been quite some time, hasn't it?
Is it? I don't.
But, you know, someone else missing from Arizona from last year, Momo Jones transferred to be back in Iona, wanted to go home, got a little homesick in Tucson.
And the Gales, Gale might have a good team this year.
They could. They're really good.
I like Iona basketball, as crazy as that sounds. But whatever, enough with the small conference college hoops. When we come back, it's time for Money Time.
No pressure. Hi, I'm... Hi, I'm Dennis Silvers from... Can't think of the name of my damn show. Golf and other four-letter words, and you're watching the Vegas Video Network, I think.
Okay, guys, it's money time! I can't believe we made it this far in the show. We haven't even referenced or mentioned Monday Night Football yet. But obviously, tonight, a huge Monday Night NFC matchup. We're going to spend the entire segment of Money Time breaking this game down. Let's start by taking a look at the point spread. We're talking about the Philadelphia Eagles -8 at home against Chicago. Total in that ball game, 47 and a hook.
So someone might say, well, this is a strange line for a 3-4 team against the 4-3 team. But as we talked about last week's show, including a particular postmortem segment talking about how those Philadelphia defensive linemen were getting healthy again, it's a much different team than what the standings show. Take a look at the hard numbers, and this is where the wise guys see the game, and this is why this line is as high as it is. The Bears this year trail their opponents by 5 first downs and 344 yards. The Eagles have beaten their opponents by 52 first downs, 831 yards. That means there's a net gap of almost 1,200 yards when you measure the way these teams have played. Eagles had some bad bounces that kept them from fulfilling their potential early in the year. But we saw against Dallas, when that defensive line is healthy, when they're able to run that wide nine the way they had intended to run it all season, not only could be a good defense, maybe a chance to be a very good one. Linebacking core is a bit weak, but when you can rush the passer and play coverage with those corners they have, this defense can play a lot better than what the statistics to date will show.
Yeah, and when you have that type of a differential, again, we're talking about 1,100, 1,150 yards differential between these two teams just through the first half of the season, and yet the records don't show that differential. It tells you one thing happened, and that one thing, obviously, is turnovers. Philadelphia had a big problem with turnovers, and the Eagles aren't a team like, let's use Indy as a prime example, a team that's created one turnover in the last 6 weeks, a defense that just isn't designed to create turnovers, and an offense that is finding a way to commit turnovers every single ballgame with an inexperienced quarterback and a veteran team that doesn't really care about being there. Philadelphia is not like Indy. They're not designed to lose the turnover battle, and moving forward, you can project perhaps the Eagles to be on the plus side of the turnover equation. A lot of that has to do with the pass rush that Philadelphia brings to the table. They're number 2 in the NFL in sacks per pass attempt, and that's despite having cluster injuries on the defensive line for a good portion of the season. And they're facing a Bears team right now that has already allowed 21 sacks and has had protection issues for Jay Cutler throughout the course of the campaign.
So now we can start to play with football science a little bit. Back to our chemistry set teaser at the start. It's not all players and power ratings, but sometimes you want to just let the sport speak to you. Teddy was doing that, talking about that pass rush, and there are a couple of elements that come into play here that will set us up for a little play of the day coming in a few minutes. Football science. If you're favored, you're better than the other team. If you're better than the other team, and you're going to have the lead in the game, running is a big factor in the equation. Can you establish the run early? And if you have a lead, can you both protect it and extend it by running late? Well, we have a 5x5 today, which is very, very rare from November on. What's a 5x5? A team that averages over 5 yards per rush against a defense that allows over 5 yards per rush. Philly gets 5.8, the Bears allow 5.2. Equation number one goes to Philadelphia. They should be able to establish the run, especially with the Bears having that new safety tandem. With Chris Harris gone, you've got some real young guys in that backfield. They're going to have to play run support. They're going to have to shadow Mike Vick a little bit. You may see some mistakes. What's the second big football fundamental element? That pass rush, which is accentuated on a night game when it's the road underdog that's going to have to throw the ball. Teddy, you talked about that Philadelphia pass rush count. Note that as good as that looks, the injuries were a factor, and also they haven't had a sack by anyone but a lineman all year. They believe they can get enough pass rush from those linemen to not have to blitz. That means better coverage. Jay Cutler playing from behind in front of a tough crowd. And we've told you on this show before how crowds impact pass rushes. That can be very tough for Chicago. So football science says, you know what, if you've got a favorite that can run well and a favorite that also has a good pass rush, not only do you control the game, but you might have the back door locked. What's that telling us now, Teddy?
It's telling us that I spent the whole time that you were talking trying to think of a good way to put the 2x4 reference in there. We're talking about 5x5s. And the only thing I could think of was to find a 2x4 somewhere here in the studio and whack you with it. But
Jacob has a couple in a locker over to the side. Not that he needs them, but just in case.
Yeah. The bottom line, I mean, we talked about the Bears' defensive concerns here. Obviously, with safety Chris Harris gone, that means we're talking about Chris Conte and Major Wright, two guys with speed, two guys who haven't played much together, trying to make plays downfield against the Philadelphia runners and pass catchers. That could most assuredly be a problem as this game progresses. But it sounds like we put all this together. You got any more analysis you want to chip in, or is it time for that play of the day?
I think it's time. Just no drum roll. Let's just go.
No drum roll, then. Play of the day it is. And for Monday Night Football, we are going to talk about the Philadelphia Eagles as home chalk. We're going to take Philly -8 tonight against Chicago and expect a comfortable win by 9 points or more. Eagles, today's Vegas Sports Day play of the day. And thank you so much for taking time out of your busy day to spend with us. It's going to wrap it up for the Monday edition. For my cackling whore friend, Dave Malinsky, I'm Ted Sobranski. Enjoy the game. And good luck.
That's the best.